with your prayer requests. We love you. God bless.
The Bible instructs us to pray for those in authority over us. In America, we also have the right and responsibility to vote for those in elected office. September 21st, the city of Port St. Lucie is holding a special election for mayor and city council, District 3. FloridaVotesValues.com has produced a voter guide for this special election. Visit FloridaVotesValues.com to find out where the candidates stand on issues that matter to you. Again, that's FloridaVotesValues.com.
Welcome to The Lighthouse, a ministry of Covenant Tabernacle World Outreach Center. And now for today's message, here's Associate Pastor Brian Longworth.
We've been asking the question, does it really take a village? And that's from the 1996 Hillary Clinton book by that title, where she argues that it takes a village to raise a child. But we've seen from the Bible that God places children into families. And in fact, the very first children were placed into a family before a village was created, before the civil government was created, before social agencies were created, families were created. And this is God's design for children to be raised. And so we should do everything that we can to support families, including our own. And we've looked, though, at some government policies that actually discriminate against families and lead to poverty. And we've talked in recent weeks, and you can review and look at the previous sermons on our church website, covenanttabernacle.com, or our church Facebook page, Covenant Tabernacle World Outreach Center. But you can actually review and look at some of those previous sermons. In recent weeks, we've talked about children at the border. We've actually looked at how the current border policy is leading to unaccompanied minors being separated from their families, being brought to America unaccompanied, without gangsters bringing them over. The girls are being raped on the way. Some kids, so young that they can't take care of themselves, are just being dumped over the border. There's even accounts of children being kidnapped from families in Central America because other people think they can get here easier if they kidnap them. And we've also looked at how the policies that we have of allowing illegals to come into the country actually does harm to those and places them in danger. We've also looked at defunding the police and how this has affected children and families. And we've looked at criminal justice reform. And that's what we're going to continue on to right now. Right now, this morning, there are fathers that should not be in jail, but are in jail in America. And we have created a justice system that predominantly is based on jailing people who do what is wrong. Now, some of the judges and prosecutors today are actually calling for leniency, and they're actually calling to let's release the people from jail. And we've reviewed some of the outcomes of that, where people have been released from jail, and then some people within 24 hours, actually, one man within 24 hours actually beheaded a woman within 24 hours of being released from jail. Just letting someone out of jail doesn't fix the problem and doesn't make someone's heart right and doesn't teach anyone responsibility and doesn't restore the victim. Biblical justice actually does a few things. It actually teaches personal responsibility, not only to the person who commits the crime, but to all of society. Biblical justice restores the one who was stolen from. Biblical justice restores the victim, unless the victim is killed, but there's still punishment that is brought about that actually reduces the chance that other people will suffer the same fate. We also see that that this actually, you know, again, reforms and brings about reformation in the life of the criminal. And so we're going to actually continue. One of the things that we talked about from Exodus chapter 22, 2 weeks ago, we talked about what happens when in different types of theft. And biblically, today in theft, and I talked about the guy that wrote us bad checks at our computer business. He went to jail. We paid taxes, and other people paid taxes for him to be arrested, prosecuted, tried, and actually housed in jail, fed, and you know, even provided clothing. Not that it's clothing that you would want to wear, but still clothing. You know, might not be food that you want to eat, but it's still food. Might not be great health care, but it's still health care. We paid to provide that. He was also, in addition to that, you know, we did receive a check, but it was single restitution. Biblical justice, there's at least two times restitution. Biblical justice also allows for individuals to defend themselves and their families and their property. And biblical justice does teach responsibility for your actions. If you kindle a fire and it burns someone else's field, you are personally responsible for that. So it teaches personal responsibility. You actually have to restore what was actually lost, either from your own field, or if you don't have a field, you don't have grain, then you would actually have to pay back the money that grain was worth. We talked last week about what would happen in biblical justice when there's a murder, or when there's also manslaughter, and how God would set up six cities of refuge, and someone who accidentally killed someone, or maybe someone who killed someone purposely but just wanted to have a trial and wanted to defend himself and didn't want to actually be put to death by the Avenger of Blood, who, by the way, was a family member that would hunt down the murderer. And if the Avenger of Blood found the murderer, the Avenger of Blood would put the murderer to death, and that was the end of it. That was the trial. No trial, no judge, no jury. The Avenger of Blood would put the murderer to death, and that would be the end of it. There would be no guilt of blood. But there was these cities of refuge where someone who killed someone accidentally could flee to. They would then have a trial. And still, even though they accidentally killed someone, there were still consequences for that. They actually had to stay in that city until the death of the high priest. And if they left that city and the Avenger of Blood found them, they could be put to death. One of the things that we see, and you may ask, well, why would you have the death penalty? And you can see the death penalty being used for several offenses in the Bible, including murder, including rape, including incest, including adultery, including homosexuality and bestiality. And many of those, the sexual sins, are a part of the... You also see them in child sacrifice. Many of those sins, if you look in Leviticus 18 and 20, we see these are sins that pollute the land. The land is polluted by these sins, and also by murder, the land is polluted. The blood, the innocent blood that is shed, pollutes the land. The only way to cleanse the land is through the death of the person who committed the murder. But there's another reason. So there's one aspect of it that's to cleanse the land, but there's another aspect of the death penalty, and that is it is so that people may see and fear. In other words, so that people may see the consequences when you commit this crime, when you go out and you murder someone, you pick up a weapon that could kill someone and you use it against someone, not in self-defense, but you use it against someone, you are a murderer and you should be put to death. there, you know that that's the consequence. And so it actually is a deterrent. And we see in Deuteronomy chapter 31, a concept that is found at least three times in the law of God, verses 12 through 13. Gather the people together, men and women and little ones, and the stranger who is within your gates, that they may hear and that they may learn to fear the Lord your God and carefully observe all the words of this law, and that their children who have not known it may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God as long as you live in the land which you cross the Jordan to possess. So here we see that they were to hear the law of God and to fear God, to want to please God, to not want to displease him, but to actually obey him and to keep his commandments and his precepts. And so the law of God was to be publicly proclaimed. And we've read in the past when we were talking about immigration that it not only was to be read to those who were Israelites, but it was to be read to the stranger as well. In other words, it was to be read to those who were immigrants. Those who were coming into the country were to read the law because they were supposed to have one law for those who were there. And that is one way of learning the fear of God, is to actually that the people may hear, that they may learn, and that they may fear the Lord. The death penalty was actually enacted in the very first time we see this, as Noah and his family were on the ark. They departed from the ark. God renews a covenant with them. And God says in Genesis chapter 9, verses 5 through 6, surely for your lifeblood I will demand a reckoning. From the hand of every beast I will require it, and from the hand of man. From the hand of every man's brother, I will require the life of man. Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed. For in the image of God, he made man. And here we see the principle of the death penalty being enacted in order to protect innocent human life. The very first instance of the death penalty is so that human life would be protected. And why should it be protected? Because of what someone can do? No, not because of what someone can do or what they can bring to the table, what they can accomplish, how much they earn. No, that's not why, or how popular they are, how beautiful they are. No, it's because we're created in God's image. You see, if we base the value of human life based on what someone can do or how much someone can earn or how beautiful someone is or how popular someone is, what happens when you become unpopular? What happens when you're not as beautiful as you used to be? What happens when you can't earn as much money anymore or you can't do the things that you used to do? Well, what happens in societies that don't honor God and fear him? What happens in societies that don't place the value of and the protection of innocent human life because on the basis of this doctrine of Imago Dei, that we are created in God's image, and it is because of that our lives should be protected. When you see this, what we see is we see those societies actually putting people to death, starving and dehydrating seniors so that because they can't work anymore, starving and dehydrating those who are retarded or have a physical disability, putting them to death, just putting them to death. We saw in Nazi Germany, actually, people being gassed, people just being destroyed. So we see, though, that God values innocent human life, and because innocent human life is there and we're created in God's image, our life should be protected, and we're created in God's image. And this is the reason that the very first reason that the death penalty was enforced. We also see, again, this principle that we see at least three times in the law of God, this principle that when the death penalty is enforced, it brings about fear, and people see what is happening. They hear about what is happening. They know that there are consequences to their actions, and they actually refrain from those actions so that they don't have to incur that penalty. In Deuteronomy chapter 17, verses 18 through 13, we read, If a matter arises which is too hard for you to judge between degree of guilt for bloodshed, between one judgment or another, or between one punishment or another, matters of controversy within your gates, then you shall arise and go up to the place which the Lord your God chooses. And you shall come to the priests, the Levites, and to the judge there in those days, and inquire of them, and they shall pronounce upon you the sentence of judgment. You shall do according to the sentence which they pronounce upon you in that place which the Lord chooses. And you shall be careful to do all that they order you, according to the sentence of the law in which they instruct you, according to the judgment which they tell you you shall do. You shall not turn aside to the right hand or to the left from the sentence which they pronounce upon you. Now the man who acts presumptuously and will not heed the priest who stands to minister before the Lord your God or the judge, that man shall die. You shall put away the evil from Israel, and all the people shall hear and fear, and no longer act presumptuously. So we see the death penalty having a effect of preventing further crime. Well, if we today would return to the place where we put rapists to death, I'm sure that would put a curtail on rape. Those who commit rape and are convicted of that would be actually put to death, as opposed to being put into prison and then released later, put on a list and being released so that they can actually go out and commit rape again. They would actually be put to death. Those who haven't yet committed rape would see that and would fear, they would fear the consequences, and they would realize that it's not worth going out and committing rape. It's not worth the risk. I need to control myself. I need to allow God to bless me with a wife, and I need to be faithful to her. And so you see this, that the people may see and fear and not act presumptuously. So you see the protection there that comes from the law of God and from the death penalty. And you might ask, well, what about people, and we've all heard about these, people that are innocent, that actually are acquitted or they're convicted of a crime that they didn't commit? I remember growing up watching the A-Team. They were convicted of a crime they didn't commit. And of course they had escaped, and they were on the law, on the loose, but the military police were constantly trying to catch up to them. But they were one step ahead, and right as the military police were about to catch them, they would defeat the bad guys and leave town and go on to the next town. But there are people that have been convicted of crimes in America that they actually didn't commit. And part of the reason is that our justice system doesn't fully protect the innocent, doesn't fully protect those who are actually accused of doing something. Biblical justice protects the innocent who are falsely accused. Even in the death penalty, we see this. In Deuteronomy chapter 19, beginning at verse 15, reading through verse 21, we read, "One witness shall not rise against a man concerning any iniquity or any sin that he commits. By the mouth of two or three witnesses, the matter shall be established. So one witness can't just rise up and testify against someone and say, this person killed someone, I saw it happen, and that person be executed. And by the way, there are even biblical examples of false witnesses rising up, and we see this even happening against Jesus. Jesus was falsely testified against and was put to death based on false testimony. But biblical justice says there needs to be two or three witnesses. The one area where you do have a little bit of where you don't necessarily have to have two or three witnesses is in rape, and in rape that happened in the countryside. And you can read about that in the Law of God. But of course, there would be physical evidence that would corroborate the rape, and that could be a second witness in addition to presumably the woman who was raped. Although men could a man or a child can be raped as well. But we see that by the mouth of two or three witnesses, the matter shall be established. If a false witness, here's the thing in verse 16, if a false witness rises against any man to testify against him of wrongdoing, then both men in the controversy shall stand before the Lord, before the priests and the judges who serve in those days. And the judges shall make careful inquiry. And indeed, if the false witness is a false witness who has testified falsely against his brother, then you shall do to him as he thought to have done to his brother. You shall put away the evil from among you. So if someone were to stand up in court and testify that I saw this person kill someone, and that didn't actually happen, they would make careful inquiry. And in fact, if it were found that witness was a false witness, well, that witness would bear the penalty that the person he was testifying against or she was testifying against would have borne, which is what? In the case of murder, it is the death penalty. So the false witness would actually be put to death. Well, that would put an end to some false witnessing, wouldn't it? And you see here the same principle that we just went over, that the people may see and fear. You see that in verse 20, and those who remain shall hear and fear, and hereafter they shall not commit such evil among you. So the people that are out there that see, wow, this person rose up and falsely accused someone of murder, and careful inquiry was made, it was determined that their witness was false, and they were actually put to death, I better not witness falsely against anyone else. So you see, the law of God teaching personal responsibility, not only to the one who was actually the perpetrator of the crime, but also to the general society at large. And in verse 21, your eye shall not pity, life shall be for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. So we see that they were not to have pity. They were not even to look upon someone and say, well, this person actually committed this crime, but you know, they're going to actually pay money and get released, and we won't put them to death. Or, you know, this person is popular, this person is well liked. No, you shouldn't have a partiality. They weren't to have partiality. The judges weren't to take gifts. So you see biblical justice. One of the things that we see in biblical justice is biblical justice also, again, teaching the general public responsibility. So when we look at the law of God and we see, and I can tell you that when I was young and I was single, I was not married yet, the penalty for committing adultery is the death penalty. I definitely wasn't going to do that. But also, what would happen if you're dating someone and you have sex outside of marriage? That's called fornication. Biblically, what happens with someone who fornicates is the biblical justice system is for you to marry the person who you fornicated with, and assuming that that woman is a virgin. Now, if the father of the young woman that you had laid with, if he didn't approve of that, you still had to make the financial commitment as if you were getting married. You still had to pay the dowry, and you would not marry her, but you would still pay the dowry. The dowry was really a financial investment to help the woman take care of herself in the event that her husband were to die. But I saw that, and I realized I should not commit fornication. I knew that if I did, the consequence was to get married. And I can tell you that helped keep me on the straight and narrow and wait until marriage, which is what God wants us to do. And this is something that we should look at the law and we should apply God's law to our lives, even though we don't have a biblical justice system in our society today. We can still look at the commandments of God, apply them to our lives, and realize that God holds us accountable, and that God holds us a standard, and we should actually reform our ways, and we should actually practice self-discipline. We should practice self-government, and it is only when we practice self-government that we can actually have less police, that we can actually have less of those law enforcement, less judges, and less need of prosecution. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make His face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up His countenance upon you and give you peace.
You've been listening to The Lighthouse, a ministry of Covenant Tabernacle in Port St. Lucie, Florida. Join us each Sunday morning for The Lighthouse. If you've been blessed by this broadcast, visit www.covenanttabernacle.com, where you can give us feedback and make a donation.
The Bible instructs us to pray for those in authority over us. In America, we also have the right and responsibility to vote for those in elected office. September 21st, the city of Port St. Lucie is holding a special election for mayor and city council, District 3. FloridaVotesValues.com has produced a voter guide for this special election. Visit FloridaVotesValues.com to find out where the candidates stand on issues that matter to you. Again, that's FloridaVotesValues.com.
Love alone can satisfy my heart.